Hey there, treasure hunters. If you enjoy what the Ironbound Chest does, please consider leaving a rating and a review on iTunes. Doing so helps to spread the wealth inside of the Ironbound Chest to other listeners, adventurers, and fellow treasure hunters. Thank you, and enjoy the show.
Hey there, I'm Megan Catherine, host of Girl Meets Nerd, a podcast about my adventure into the Nerdverse and your beginner's guide to becoming one. Up until a few years ago, I had only ever played Mario Kart and Monopoly. But then I met a very cute nerd who spent most of his time exploring imaginary worlds with his friends. Very quickly, I was won over by this nerd and his fantastical world of games and adventure. Join me on the Girl Meets Nerd podcast as I explore video games, board games, Dungeons & Dragons, and much, much more. You can find The Girl Meets Nerd on pretty much any music streaming service, including Spotify, Google Play, and iTunes. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Girl Meets Nerd Podcast so you don't miss a single drop of nerdy goodness.
You're listening to The Ironbound Chest. Our topic for discussion this month is first times, and today I'm sitting down with John, Dungeon Master for Tale of the Manticore. Let's add some wealth to the chest. Hello everyone, and thank you for opening the Ironbound Chest. My name is Austin Moraga, and today I'm joined by John, the Dungeon Master for Tale of the Manticore, a one-man D&D podcast.
Hey Austin, thanks for having me on the show.
Absolutely no problem, my friend. I'm really, really excited for you to be here today, and as we were talking about before we started recording, I've got a lot of real love for this show you do, first off. So the way this show will work is that each month I have a new topic, and this month's topic is first times. All about, you know, how did you start doing what you're doing, first experiences relating to what you do and stuff like that. But before we dive into that, how's your week been? How's you been doing this week, though?
Although these are odd times, not bad at all. I mean, the sun is out, and although I don't actually interact with humans much over the last few months, I've been doing a lot of writing, been doing a lot of recording, a lot of editing, all things that I like to do. And so in a way, the COVID-19 has kind of made my show much easier, much more possible than it would have been. And so even though times are weird, and obviously there's a lot of hardship going around for a lot of people, I find that I found a space within it that there's some good to be had too.
I would say I'm right there with you too, because I probably wouldn't be able to do this podcast and be talking to you if it weren't for what's going on, as terrible as it might be. But like, I don't think I'd be doing this. So thank you for being here. I have a golden question that I want to ask each of my guests. What do you treasure most about D&D?
Are you making a chest pun when you say treasure?
Absolutely, I am.
Do I get experience points if I make chest-related puns?
If we're working with the older editions, sure, man, yeah.
All right, you might say that we're bound to these rules.
You're doing more puns than I think I ever have now. Okay. But sorry. Absolutely. No, it's fine. I love puns.
I'm going to answer your question. So I think my most treasured memory is the first time I played Keep on the Borderlands. I remember at the time, I think I was 11 years old. This goes back to first times. This was the first game of D&D I ever played. I didn't know what a keep was. And so I thought it was like the verb, you know, like stay on the borderlands. My experience with games up until then, as with most people, was, you know, Monopoly and Hungry Hungry Hippos and Checkers. And so when I was reading about turns and rounds, I really thought it was like a turn in D&D must be, well, it's my turn. And then it must be your turn, because that's my only understanding of games at the time. And maybe I wasn't the sharpest kid. And so it took a while before we kind of like got it. And by the same token, I thought rounds were like, okay, everyone gets a turn and then there's a new round, which not exactly right, is it? Anyway, I remember like the box had a crayon in it. There were like all of the funny dice. And oh, fun fact, I actually just got in the mail. Hear that? This is the first set of dice I've had in 25 years.
What?
Yeah.
Oh my God. What? How have you been living
first times
without
all
dice?
Over again?
Oh my gosh.
Well, I walked away from the hobby for decades.
Wow.
I think from about 17 to I'm in my later 40s now. Nothing. And I mean, arguably, I'm only kind of playing again now. If it wasn't for COVID-19, I'd be finding a table. I'd be finding a group. But actually, the podcast is kind of a way for me to kind of come back to the table. Anyway, so I got my first bunch of dice here. And actually, just looking at them is making me so happy because it's just bringing back a flood of great memories from when I was a kid.
Isn't that great, though? Just being able to have an object that kind of has such a strong bond to... So such good memories like that. I'm really happy for you. I honestly am. That's great.
Yeah, it's funny to look at these things and be like, it's just like a really cheap piece of resin. But yeah, it totally makes me happy.
Man, well, that's great, dude.
Now I can stop using that app.
I've definitely gone through a lot of dice rolling apps myself, and some of them are just, they're not fun to use because it's not the same thing as having actual dice in your hand, hearing the clack, you know, in your fist and just rolling it on the table, man. No, that's great, though. I'm glad you were able to get yourself some dice. That's great. And thank you very much also for sharing with that memory for me. I love that. I've seen, I think, some updated versions of Keep on the Borderlands for, I think, 5e, but I did know that it was what it was a first edition or was it second edition?
It was basic.
Basic.
So I think it's like module B2 or something like that, which is like basically the second module they made. I think.
Oh wow.
Well, I could be wrong on that, but I think it was like it predates Redbox.
Oh wow, I didn't know that. I still don't know a lot of like the early histories of D&D. I know like kind of like how it was conceptualized and stuff like that, but in terms of after they began actually producing, you know, adventures and you know, all the tables and everything like that, that's still very much a blur to me. So, but it's just fascinating to see exactly how far we've come now. And it's just,
yeah,
it's just
incredible. By the same token, I don't know much about 5e. I've never played a game of 5e. There's something I need to get off my chest. That's more experience points for me, by the way.
Well, thank you. Thank you for being so brave. I do appreciate it. So Tale of the Manticore is, as you say in your intros, it is a mashing of two concepts, right? For the listeners who may not be familiar with Tale of the Manticore, would you explain a bit more in detail about what the show is and kind of what you do?
Sure. Happily. Thanks. So for anybody who's kind of curious about what the show is, it's an experiment. It's kind of a game, but it's not really a game. And it's kind of an audio drama, but it's definitely not just an audio drama. Basically, it's maybe 50-50 or 60-40 combination of those two things so that it's narrated like an audio drama, and there's, you know, some sound effects and music and stuff like that added to sort of make it more immersive, hopefully. But whenever anything would happen in the story that requires any element of randomness, I roll dice and apply D&D rules, and it's in, you know, the genre of D&D. So it's essentially a dramatized version of a D&D game. I've actually given a lot of thought as to, like, what this thing is, because I'm not really sure. I guess maybe, like, a sandbox fiction is kind of a way you could describe it.
That's pretty good. I would agree with you there. It is definitely, I think from your episode 0 to episode 1, you do lay out the foundations very well of how this is. You know, you're not, this isn't pre-planned. You don't have any, you know, set in stone things that, you know, the will happen because you put so much emphasis on the fate of the dice, you could say, which absolutely I love, and is especially for what you're doing is absolutely important since it's, you know, it's just you. But man, your narration in it is phenomenal. And what I found funny whenever we first started talking before recording, I was like, oh, he sounds like so soft voice. Like he's such like a very, you know, like a gentle tone. And in Tale of Manticore, you have this epic, dark grittiness to your voice that is just so, it is pleasing to the ears in the tone of which you're setting for your story. And it's great. It's so great.
Hey, thank you. I can only do that voice very early in the morning. So actually I do all my recording like when I get up. and then I have all that garbage in my voice, and so it's like, you know, much lower. And then over the course of the day, a whole bunch of coffee goes in there.
Oh yeah,
and loosens things up, I guess.
That's funny. Well, I do love that. It's so funny to me. So I think the dark grittiness is something that I'll probably be referencing a lot, because I don't know if I can think of anything that just better suits it. It's like a survival, almost like a survival horror game set in D&D that you're playing by yourself. And it's just, listeners, please, if you want to stop this podcast and go listen, do it, because you should. But so what is it about this style of storytelling that draws you in? Because it seems like you have a real big passion for this way of telling your story. And if not, then maybe I'm reading between the lines, but it seems like you really do love this, you know, grim, dark genre.
I do. I really do.
Good.
I really do, to the point where I can't quite figure out why there isn't more of it. And there's almost none of it in the world of podcasting, especially, like, you know, for D&D specific podcasts. There's a couple, but 99% of D&D podcasting is kind of comedic. It's either for the sake of comedy and is essentially improv with a little bit of, you know, with a D&D hat on it, which can be great. I love some of that stuff, and I listen to a bunch of it. And then in some cases, it's not for the sake of comedy, but there's a lot of, like, goofing around and silliness involved in it. And then the other option, which would be sort of like a quote-unquote serious story, almost non-existent. There's only a few. There was the Turncloaks podcast, which was, if you think mine is dark, oh boy, this is super dark.
Oh no.
And very good. It's great. In the same way that, you know, Game of Thrones is dark. It treats itself seriously, and there's not a ton of laughs. So it's not necessarily like haha fun or funny to listen to, and certainly mine isn't. I wouldn't describe it as fun. It's something else. Hopefully it's kind of like, you know, a Lord of the Rings or a Game of Thrones or a Star Wars or something, where it takes itself seriously, even if there might be a couple of moments of levity. I'm not sure mine has any yet.
I would say that there are a few. You maybe have a few.
Yeah, like very, very few. That it's just, it's just not the thing I'm making, right? I'm making something that it's meant to, like, hurt. If you want to have your feelings hurt, you should listen to Tale of the Manticore.
I would say you're a bit right, and it's nothing but enjoyable. It's dramatic, it's thrilling, it's suspenseful, and the way you lay it out and I think it was your episode zero where, you know, you're not throwing really any punches with what happens to your characters. And I love that, because, like you said, other D&D podcasts, which, and again, you do mention this, I believe, they are great. And if you want to listen to those, by all means do. And, like, there's plenty of them out there, but, like, this is not what Tale of the Manticore is. And I think you have in every one of your opening, it's like, there will be pain in the days ahead or something.
I asked my partner after I did that, I was like, am I laying it on a bit thick?
No.
And she's like, I'm like, I'm going to keep it.
Good. I love it. Because every time I hear it, I'm like, good. I buckle in and just wait for something to happen, whether it be bad or the rare case of it being good. And it's just great. Mm. But I think what you were talking about with, you know, there's no dark podcast is because people might be a little bit intimidated to do that in such a saturated market of these, as you said, these, you know, improv with D&D podcasts, which I think those come about so often because you have so many people playing with, you know, their close buddies, their family, people who they joke around with on a daily basis, you know, and that's, I think that comes out more often than not because of that. And while there are definitely
you must be right. Yeah.
Yeah. But there are definitely some out there that do have a more serious tone, but they do have that levity at times where it's, like, very jovial. But, and I do think in Tale of the Manticore, you do have those rays of light in that gloom of your podcast that does make it very, and I won't say jovial again, but it is just that moment of respite from that darkness that makes it like, I can rest my mind a little bit easier at this moment, but you still know that danger is lurking around the corner. You don't know if it's going to strike just yet, but you know it's there.
I think one of the appeals for me of the OSR, and again, I haven't played 5e, so kind of talking out my butt here, but I think it is more lethal. I think it's more lethal. Like, there's no death saves, there's no negative hit points, there's nothing like that. And so there's kind of a fear when you're playing that when you get knocked down, you're not going to get back up. Mm-hmm. And so I think the play style is different, and there is, I don't know, have you ever played a video game where you couldn't save?
Oh yeah.
It's different.
It is.
Right. You play it a lot more cautiously, and it's a lot more like heart pounding. So maybe the old school way of playing is a bit more like that.
Yeah, I would say so. I wrote down a few notes to what I felt like it was akin to in my mind. And to remind you and listeners, like, I have no experience in any editions of D&D other than half of a session of 4th edition, but then most of it now is all, it's all 5e. But just the way you combined the music you put in there, the sound effects, as I mentioned earlier, that graveliness of your voice in the early mornings, the sense of realism that you adhere to the story, it reminds me of earlier arcade games where you put in your quarter and you had the life of your character that you had, and if you died, you died, and you had to restart. And it's like every time I listen to your podcast, it just gives me this sense of what I felt like D&D was supposed to be or was whenever I first heard about D&D. The lifestyle of the adventurer who had a hard life, you know, and especially with your characters, not to spoil anything, but like they start off with nothing, literally. And it is that slog through that just drew me to first imagine games like D&D or other tabletop games, to where I want to worry about if I'm going to find food around this, you know, forest, or if, you know, something's going to attack me in the middle of the night. And it's just, it pulls me in, and it's so good.
Yeah, Austin, I totally get that. Like, I'm very drawn to the stories that begin with the characters as, you know, zeros. They're just meat, and they're in a lot of danger, and they can't do much. And then, you know, if they become heroes, then, like, I want to go on that journey, but I don't necessarily want to go on the journey of the character that begins like superpowered. And actually, this is a half-baked idea, but I wonder if the sort of the new school of role-playing is influenced by the ubiquity of the Marvel Universe and superhero movies, which have been, you know, dominated cinemas for like the last decade or so. What I've seen of 5e, it seems like the characters, it's as if they were starting at 3rd or 4th level. You know, they can do a lot.
I've played enough 5e to know that most people want to start around where you're saying third level, because with the way they do things, like they have subclasses now that you don't get to choose your path until 3rd level. So most people, most DMs will just say, hey guys, you know, let's not start at 1 or 2, go to 3rd.
Right.
You know, it'll be much more fun. I would say, yeah, I very much agree with you. What you say with, you know, that the inspiration a bit of the Marvel movies. It's like 5th edition says, you know, you are an adventurer. You've already had some sorts of victories that you have under your belt. You are a hero out of the gate.
Yeah. And if you're just, like a wizard, you're casting Firebolt at will, right?
The cantrip system.
It's an at will thing. So to me, that's a superhero. Whereas, you know, you take a magic user in the OSR, they're going to be able to cast one magic missile per day. That's it.
And it's so brutal. And listening to some of the characters on your podcast, it was so brutalizing hearing that. But it was, and again, it was just so compelling to want to just continue to listen more and more to say, what are they going to do? How are they going to do this? And I think that's something that really catches my ears. And I would hope a lot of listeners to say, are these characters going to do that? I am rooting for these characters.
You know what? Me too. And actually, I live in fear of bad things happening to them because
they
might. I do. Whenever I'm like, if I'm at the keyboard and I'm typing the next bit, it kind of goes in chunks, right? I'll kind of type away for 5 minutes of story, including like the dice rolls as they happen. But if there's a combat, especially if it's with something that would end up in a sort of like an ignoble death, like recently they fought giant rats.
Oh yeah.
If one of the characters had died, I guess I'm spoiling something when I say that they don't, you know, it's out, it's released. And as I'm rolling through that, you know, if one of them dies, then they die. Or if one of them, you know, there's a 5% chance of catching a disease from a rat bite. If that happened, that character would die. I actually live in fear of them dying, just like in a game. That's how I know I'm not just writing a story. It is something else. Again, it's not really a game either, but
it is something that
Actually, I'm invested in the characters in the same way that I am in a game. And if and when, you know, there's death, I think I'll be the most upset.
Well, yeah, you definitely, as a writer, you definitely grow attached to characters when you're writing a story. But I think, correct me if I'm wrong or if I'm treading off into something that doesn't curtail to you, but I feel like in what you're doing with this D&D, to where you have that improbability, maybe not improbability, but that chance of the unknown happening, and you making this commitment to sticking with that, in my eyes, it would definitely be much more crushing to not know that character was going to die in the next set of dice rolls. Because as a writer, you can just, you plan that stuff out, you know? You say, okay, Vanessa is going to die because a burglar is going to come into her house, blah, 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 blah. But with what you're doing, you could definitely, as you're recording, have to take a minute to just collect yourself and be like, well, this character just died and you can't do anything about it. And it definitely is harder. And especially going back to how 5e goes now, you know, plenty of DMs, you know, who again are around all the friends and around a bunch of people, they are there to have, you know, everyone to just have a good time, to have fun. I don't know if you've read much about the rules as written or the rule of fun in 5e now, which is a very loose concept. But, you know, if the DM rules it, the rules don't necessarily need to always apply because they want to have fun. But you, right, it is just you. It is you committing to this dark fantasy storytelling that the unknown can happen at any moment. And you just have to roll with it. The way you do it in the moments that it does happen is phenomenal. Like the writing that you weave into the dice rolls is so great.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I feel like the moment I fudge a die roll, that's kind of it. That's the end of the game.
That's what I was thinking too, because, you know, DMs might, you know, some DMs choose to fudge, some DMs don't, but, you know, and you know, listeners might not always believe it because there are some times where it does seem very fortuitous for the characters at times, but I'll say I trust you at times that you're not going behind the scenes just to make something thrilling and exciting. And so it's definitely just a compelling story, the way the dice weaves together with the way you write in this dark horror, you could say.
Yeah, it is a bit of a horror thing. And no, the dice are all real. All the dice rolls are real. The moment I stop doing that, I am just writing a novel.
Definitely sets it apart, you know. And I was thinking too that I get so lost in your podcast that sometimes I forget that I'm actually listening to a podcast, and it's almost like I'm listening to an audiobook. But those moments where you cut back and to say, okay, here's some dice rolls, you know, you go into those moments, it definitely does bring it back into, like, this is a game that you're playing by yourself, and it's very impressive.
Does 5e have one of those, like, solo adventures at the beginning, like the original ones do?
Honestly, because I don't think
that's
so.
That's kind of the closest. Oh, really, eh? A lot of people really, like, credit those little stories. It's basically like a choose-your-own-adventure story.
Right.
And they credit those with kind of explaining to them what role-playing is. And so, yeah, like, what I'm doing is probably closest to those introductory, like, how do you play D&D choose your own adventure scenarios. All the old schoolers will know what I'm talking about.
Shout out to you guys. Well, I actually do want to know, like, what was your first foray into these sort of dark fantasy novels? Do you remember what maybe the first book you read of this type was that kind of drew you into this and think, I love this?
Let me think. I guess The Hobbit, I read that as a very young kid, reread it again as an adult, and I at the time, like the first time I read it, I didn't realize like how sort of fairy tale-ish and childish isn't the right word, but the style of writing is extremely different than, say, Lord of the Rings, much more accessible to a kid. So yeah. I guess that would be the first one. And then there was D&D, and I've definitely spent way more time, although I played a lot as a kid, I definitely spent way more time just reading the Dungeon Master's Guide and reading the modules, and I read more modules than I ever played, for sure. And just kind of imagined them and just soaked up all of the fantasy goodness out of them. And then let's see, I guess you got to include Star Wars. Star Wars isn't exactly dark, but it's definitely serious, right? It's not,
yeah.
It's not Spaceballs.
Definitely not.
You can say that just for certain because it's like, as soon as you get a Jar Jar Binks, like people go ballistic, and it's because they broke that covenant of like, we're going to, even though it's an oxymoron to say that a fantasy world could be treated in a serious way. That's ridiculous. It's a fantasy world. But there is something to that where a world has to like follow its own rules and take itself seriously.
Yeah.
And so Star Wars does that. Even like the ridiculousness of Yoda or the creature cantina or all of these things. It didn't really break that promise until like Jar Jar Binks. And boy, like the reaction.
People still make fun of that. To this day, as a young person,
rightly so,
I am on the internet all the time, and I still see people posting stuff about Jar Jar Binks, how they just hate him, and they just rag on him so much, because it did, Star Wars did have that tone about itself that, you know, swept the world off its feet, and it was whenever they went back to episode one in 2000, and I think Jar Jar was in there. And I think at the time people were like, okay, what's this weird character? Maybe he's just going to, you know, go away after a while. But no, he stuck around. And weirdly enough, people stuck to him because it was so much of a departure for that tone. And I think it's the tone that movies like that set should definitely be cemented and continued, I think, if they want to continue that feeling that listeners or viewers have, which I think that your podcast does well. But for movies, did you ever get into The Dark Crystal?
Yeah, for sure. Like, I'm at the right age for all of that stuff. Dark Crystal, Time Bandits, Legend. Oh, man, Legend for me. Actually, I still love that movie. I rewatched it just about a month ago, and it's still pure magic for me. Actually, I didn't realize it was a Ridley Scott movie. It's Ridley Scott. It's like the unknown Ridley Scott movie, and it's amazing. I love it. Believe it or not, Tom Cruise and Tim Curry plays, I guess, Satan?
I'm looking it up online now, and I have seen images of Tim Curry in that get up the Satan costume with the huge horns and everything.
Yeah. Like when I was writing about, you know, goblins and trying to think of like, what do they sound like and to do the voice or whatever, I was totally channeling Legend.
That's great.
You know, like the needle teeth and the black gums and the kind of high-pitched, crabby voice. Yeah.
We are goblins. We talk like this. It's so great, though, and it sounds fantastic on the podcast. Those movies that you mentioned, and now looking at some of them online, it is definitely what your podcast evokes in my mind very, very perfectly. So you hit it right on the nail, man. You hit it on, or right on the nail.
Thanks. I'm
hit
going for fuzzy 80s.
Fuzzy 80s. I mean, you do it well.
Fuzzy 80s.
I think things like, I don't know if you've watched Stranger Things at all. They are kids in the 80s. They all play D&D because it was at, you know, a popular thing for a bunch of the nerds. Mm-hmm. And they definitely have also that very 80s vibe, that dark, gritty 80s vibe that I was kind of thinking of whenever I was listening to your podcast as well, that it brought out. I think what your podcast does in terms of darkness and that seriousness, like we said before, not a lot of podcasts do, but I think what you're doing is something that is almost more notable than others because you're taking that leap into something that not a lot of people are doing.
It's that's for sure. Maybe nobody likes it, but definitely not a lot of people are doing it.
Yeah, and I think
it's like
good.
Not a lot of people have like mayonnaise on their chocolate ice cream, but maybe that's just because it's bad.
Do you put mayonnaise on your chocolate ice cream?
No.
Okay.
I need to flip this interview and ask you a question because you just hit on something which I find really interesting, and I don't know even who to ask. So So I'm asking you.
Sure.
And I think you talked about this with Tom, actually, in a little bit. So you mentioned that in Stranger Things, it's a bunch of nerds. And definitely, like, when I was a kid, D&D was for nerds. And I'll just fess up. Like, that's why I stopped. It was just eventually just too embarrassing and impossible to, like, keep it in the closet. So I just stopped. Like, I was in a rock band, and you couldn't do both. You couldn't be cool and play D&D. It was one or the other. So I chose rock and roll for a while.
Hell yeah.
So my question for you is, has that actually changed? Like, the D&D is for nerds thing was 100% true when I was a teenager. So nowadays, is it still, like, is there a stigma? Clearly, it's still a nerdy thing to do, but nerds are kind of, like, they're mainstream now. So that's the question is, like, is there a stigma? Is it, you know, do you think there's still, like, closet D&D players, or is that, like, nobody cares now?
I will answer this as best as I can, and I might get into it a bit deeper than I mean to, but so to me, I haven't played a decade's worth of D&D like some of the other people I know, but I have been around it enough to know that, and I say this in my episode zero, right now we are in a golden age of D&D. And when I mean that,
for sure.
Yeah, we have unlimited number of podcasts, people who have made big names for themselves because of this game. Matt Mercer from Critical Role is probably the first thing, the first one that people think of, and that is you know, live streamed, and other people are live streaming their games. But with all that, I would say that there is a stigma to it still, and I'll get into that by saying, when people who are not, you know, nerds, not into the tabletop role-playing games, or even, you know, video games, or even, you know, fantasy novels, any of that kind of stuff, like some of my friends were, you know, we were nerds, but, you know, D&D also was that sort of, oh, you don't play D&D unless you're a super nerd, right?
Right, but right.
It still has a stigma to it, because I think you have people who maybe, you know, only play sports or are hardcore musicians or anything in between, you know, whatever have you, that think of D&D with the connotations of what maybe is shown in media. They've probably heard of the Satanic Panic. They've probably seen that the stereotype of, oh, you play D&D, so you dress up as elves and wizards and you're wearing all the costumes and stuff like that. And right off the bat, people probably see that as hyper nerd. And that's an uncomfortable feeling for a lot of people, I think, especially a few of my friends in college. They were like on a sports team, and they're like, no, I'm never going to play D&D. That's I would never do that. It's embarrassing. But, you know, you have people who play fantasy football, which is highly similar in terms of what you're doing. You know, you're fantasizing about, you know, different things. You're doing math, right? And a big thing of D&D is math. And I think that's another thing that pushes people back when they think, oh, you have to roll dice and you have to add a bunch of numbers up? Nah, that ain't for me. And there's a whole bunch of things that meld itself together to present this very slight force field around D&D when you first hear about it or first even see it being played, you know, because you could have a friend join you at a D&D game. Just say, hey, man, come along with me. I'm about to play a session of D&D with my buddies. You can just tag along. This friend of yours is watching you, you know, roll dice, talk in strange voices, and all these things. That can be intimidating to open up to people like that. And I think a lot of thing about D&D is, with people you play with, is you have to open up in a way that nothing else really allows you to do in such an easygoing, comfortable environment. And so it does have that, like I said, of small force field around it. But with the emergence of all these podcasts, with things like Critical Role, which I have not seen, and I will freely say that I have never seen an episode, never listened to an episode of Critical Role, even though it's the biggest thing out there, I do think that it is highly integral to the popularity of this game of D&D.
I gotta stop you. Why have you not heard Critical Role?
I'm scared to, and when I say I'm scared to is I mean it's daunting. There is so much content of it because, you know, I think they just got their episode 100, and I don't know if that's one season or two, but also they film it, right? They are a, a visual media kind of thing. I think they
there's podcasts, a podcast version too.
Well, also I've thought about listening to the podcast, and it's just starting something new that I know is highly popular, and that thought of, well, I don't want to not like this and, you know, not have that camaraderie with everyone else, you know, because I'm like, oh, it's D&D. I should love this. But, you know, because they have such a, you know, they have a huge high budget. They have all this stuff that they are able to do, which is great. You know, that's more fun for the players, more fun for watchers and that stuff. But it just seems like such a daunting task that at least right now, I'm just going to hold off on it. But that, and again, though, Critical Role does do a good job of creating kind of welcoming arms to people who are unfamiliar with it, as well as certain celebrity, you know, DMs who have made a really great impression on the rest of the outer societies other than just nerddom. And I think that...
like Vin Diesel or
Will Wheaton. Vin Diesel, Will Wheaton, definitely. It's funny to me to think about those people who, you know, Vin Diesel, you think action movie star, you know, you think macho guy, but inside, you know, he's a huge nerd. And Will Wheaton, you know, you think of Will Wheaton, you think of Wesley Crusher on The Next Generation, which he was kind of a nerd on that show. But I mean, still, it is, he did have that connection to a larger audience that wasn't all nerds, you know. But I think the collaborative way that the people in power, I'll say, in D&D right now are coming together to make D&D as open and as friendly as it can seem, coupling that with how 5th edition is very freeing. And we talked about earlier about how, you know, a DM doesn't really have to go with the rules. You know, they can just say, let's have fun, guys. Let's just play, you know? Mm-hmm. So I do think that there is a stigma. It, like I said before, I do think we are in this golden age where it is every day becoming more and more of a commonality in people's lives. Going from even 10 years ago, seeing the state of D&D then to now is exponential and phenomenal. And it's great because, you know, you can do your podcast and more people will watch it now than I think they may have done it if you had started it 10 years ago, because podcasts like what we're doing have reached to a point where, you know, it's easy to do.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I guess that would be my answer. And I hope I answered that well enough without going off on a tangent, but...
No, it's really interesting to me because I don't know that my perspective is an honest one. You know, like as a high school teacher, you know, we have a D&D club at my school. And I remember like seeing them during, you know, one of these club crawls where you can kind of go and you can see what the science club does and you can see what the debating club does and you can see what the Model UN does. And then, you know, you can see what the D&D club does and, you know, you sign up for whatever. And I remember seeing like a lot of people signing up for the D&D club. And what struck me the most, to be totally honest, and also totally at a step with the times, there were a lot of girls signing up, like probably 50-50, which really surprised me, only because, again, when I was a kid, it was like 99% guys.
Yeah.
But I think that has changed a lot. I don't think it is 50-50 out there. If you listen to, you know, a dozen podcasts and listen to them, there's some female players, which I think is great. It's still, I wouldn't say 50-50. It's still pretty much mostly guys, but not entirely. Like, it's definitely changed.
That's actually one of the topics that I want to cover in a later month, is that kind of diversity of female players and male players. Because, yeah, D&D initially was very much of a male-dominated thing. But going back to what I was just ranting about of things like Critical Role and other D&D podcasts, you have such great female figureheads on the forefront who are showing women that, you know, you don't have to be super, super into everything nerdy to enjoy a game like this.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's just furthering the openness of the community, which, you know, I think we talked about before recording, like everyone in the community of the D&D or tabletop role-playing game community, they are super, super welcoming. I don't think I can name one example of a time where someone was like, oh no, we don't want them here, or you know, I don't want to be nice to you for whatever reason. People are so welcoming now because I think it goes back to the fact that D&D was sort of that underdog, that huge underdog that no one wanted to admit that they liked. Like you said, you stopped mm-hmm. playing for years. And I think that people are so open about it because they know how it feels to be that outcast in a world where people judge you every day. You know, whether you know it or not, people are judging you and it's not fair. And people want to be accepted in places where they know they'll be accepted and where they know they'll have others around them who know how they feel. And D&D and tabletop role-playing games are, I think, at the forefront of those communities to where they say, hey, we know exactly how you feel. We are those people too. Get in here, you know, get in this hug. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. yeah, I will add to what you're saying about the female players. There are, I think, even a lesser extent of female players than male, but I would say that there is a lower demographic of female dungeon masters or game masters or whatever you want to call them. I know they're out there, but I have yet to, in my few years of podcast listening, I have maybe come across only a small handful that have, you know, a female dungeon master. And I would love to see and hear more of that, you know, but I think there is, and again, going back to the stigma, there is a little bit of maybe a stigma to that. I don't know. And I don't want to say anything and someone get mad at me, but I think that, you know, right. Yeah, I think it is time for everyone to say like, hey, you know, anyone can do this, you know, everyone can play this game. And I think they should,
I think
honestly.
I think you were saying in your Zero episode that like just about the importance of D&D and like how big a deal it is as a mode of storytelling. Yeah. And I remember when you said that, I was like, yes, I totally get this guy. Like, I feel the same way. Sometimes I sit around and I think, is D&D like a different medium? Well, no, not exactly, but it is definitely a different. I agree with you. I think it's so important that you could compare it to athletics.
Yeah.
It's a big deal, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like when they invented this thing, I think they like really did give birth to, it's like inventing the novel or inventing the TV show or something. You know, I think it's that big a deal.
Yeah. And I don't think they exactly knew what they had was so important to people nowadays. You know, what is it? It's been about 50 years. When did it start? The late 70s, I think, early
80s? Yeah, late 70s. No, for sure. They stumbled into it, you know, lurching fits and starts. They were just trying to make some rules for their tabletop wargaming miniature things. That's kind of how it started. And the idea of taking on a character role, I think that evolved kind of slowly as a kind of afterthought to this miniatures combat rules.
Like being an individual, like the adventurer, you're saying?
Like actually getting into a persona, I think, came as secondary to them setting up some rules to make a battle game for their figurines.
I think, you know, like I was just saying, you know, I don't think that they knew exactly what they had on their hands. And adding in that layer of personalization, that individuality that the players could take on really did expand the future of what D&D has become and probably will become in the future, you know? And what I like to think, what you were saying about all about the episode Zero and the storytelling, in my eyes, D&D is the evolution of storytelling itself. You are telling a story, but you are creating the story yourself, you know, with friends around you. And
collaborative storytelling. Yeah.
Collaborative storytelling that has an absolute importance to you at the table. You yourself, what we were talking about earlier, you know, you will be devastated if these characters of yours die. And me, myself, if my players at my table were to kill them, I'd feel terrible. Mm-hmm. You put so much of yourself into this thing that you are creating that it is you, it is a part of you, and you know, letting that go or having that taken away is like killing a part of yourself. And it's,
absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, it's mind-numbingly crazy to kind of wrap my head around all the finer, minuscule points of how D&D affects people when they play it and after they play it. And it's just, it's a great thing to be able to play this game either by yourself or with others and still be able to have those emotions come out of playing. And I actually, whenever I first was doing some research on your show, I wasn't sure that I would I would like the medium because I had listened to a few others where it was just one person and they were making this, you know, story by themselves, and they weren't doing such a hot job with it, I'll say. And I wasn't sure that I was going to like yours just because I was so used to the podcast where there's so many people around the table. When I first listened to it, though, I didn't like it. I loved it. I absolutely loved Tale of the Manticore. And again, listeners, please check out his story, this tale that he's weaving. If you have a moment, just do it because it's great.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. I do want to know, though, do you have any plans afterwards? Say this story gets done. Would you ever think about maybe turning it into like a written novel form, or just keep it out there as a podcast?
I think it could make a decent novel, and it would read actually much the same way those introductory adventures that I mentioned earlier would go. Like, I would want the die rolling would have to be in there, and the sort of the breaking the fourth wall asides to discuss rules as they developed, I think that would all have to be in there. And so it would just be a cleaned up transcript of what already exists. That's about it. Other than that, I would be like interested in actually collaborating with other people. I'm doing this alone mostly out of necessity. But you know, some of the things that we've talked about today, I think maybe something like what I do almost has to be alone, because treating it as seriously as I do, or as in a kind of the darker way that I do, I think that's really tough unless you've got laser focused people. Otherwise, it's just going to be way too easy to like joke around, because that is how we, you know, that is how we hang out. We joke around and, you know, take the piss and all the rest of it. So to actually get down to the business of making this dark thing, I think it does help that I do this alone. Something I hadn't thought of, but I think it's a good point.
Just kind of trying to think about, you know, you down in the future, if you were to, you know, have someone else come on with you, I think it would be such a different feeling also, you know, not just with you and your partner working with you on this, but just I think the feeling that listeners would get would be so vastly different that I don't know if such a serious, gritty tone could be used, because, you know, like you expertly said, you know, with someone else, you do get laughs, you do get more jovial, and it's much harder to have that seriousness all the time. And it's definitely something that, it's sad to say, like, it's a sad statement to say, I have to do this alone. But if it works for you and it is working, then I don't think you should ever change that.
Yeah, it's not. I know it's not impossible, because there are podcasts that do it. You've got like an ensemble and it's still dark. Like a lot of Cthulhu ones, for example, they managed to pull that off. It's harder to find those people that want to make that thing, because most people don't. They just want to have some laughs, which, you know, bless them. They're probably right.
And it goes back to D&D being that thing where it kind of wants you to play with other people, to have the share in this journey, this storytelling of an adventure with your friends, you know, that you can all share in. It is a good point to point out there, though, that it is something that you, if you want seriousness, then I think either having people, like you said, with a laser focus is absolutely crucial. But otherwise, you might just have to do it on your own. And I will say, like, after listening to what you have out right now, it made me want to do my own single person adventure like that, just to see what would happen. I don't think I could do it as expertly as you by any means, but it was definitely something like, man, I wanted him to like share all of his tables and get all of his like in his mind of how he's doing things, because it is such a fun idea to have.
I'm just making it up as I go.
Hey, I mean, it works.
No, I'm just making it up as I go.
Well, it works very much. So what actually made you think like, I want to do this, you know, like what inspired you to start telling this story in particular?
I was like walking around the pool, and then I stuck my toe in the pool and I didn't jump in for a while. I was kind of like scoping out podcasts. I definitely listened to a ton of them. I think I mentioned in my zero episode that I just wanted to find a podcast that was like dark and gritty, but still D&D. I just couldn't find one. Until I kind of did, and I found this one podcast, which I got to recommend. It's called The Iron Realm. And I don't know if you've come across that one yet.
I think I heard an ad. I found this.
I have an ad in one of mine, actually. I've since contacted the creator, and you know, we do some cross-promo stuff. And I let him know, of course, he was a big influence on me. Anyway, I found his podcast, and he done quite a lot of them. He's up to like episode 85.
Oh, wow.
And he was basically playing this D&D game on his own. It's like really, really similar to what I do. And then in segments as well. And so I borrowed the idea of having kind of like to switch gears every now and then. That's his idea, not my idea. And so I listened to his, and like, it's very DIY, but I found it compelling. Like, I kept coming back to his podcast and I listened to all of them and really enjoyed everything. And I tried to find more like that. And more specifically, narrative. His is very much like a game. And I couldn't find it. So I started thinking, maybe this is a niche. It's either a niche that I could like fill, or it's nothing. And I'll make it and three people will listen to it by accident. And so getting into it was weird because, like I said, I was out of the game. I was a total non-player at all. I started thinking like, oh, can I do this without like telling anybody? Because I really didn't want to come out and say like, oh, I'm interested in making this thing. I didn't think anybody would be interested in hearing about it anyway. So I was starting to like, I would stay at work like an hour after classes were done. Mm-hmm. And I would try and do some writing and try and do some recording. And it took a while to get the tech right. I was like, can I record with my phone? No, that sounds like crap. you know, and I tried various microphones and they sounded like crap. And this whole time I had a damn studio right at home. But I didn't want to do it at home. And eventually COVID-19 happened and we're at home. And I'm like, this is the opportunity to make this thing. I'm at home all the time. Like, there's nothing but time. I have a studio 12 steps away. And so I basically told my partner, listen, I don't know how you're going to receive this information, but I want to make this. And then I described it to her. And actually, she was wonderful, totally accepting, which was, I wasn't really sure what she was going to think of it. And in fact, she participated. She does one of the voices.
I was wondering that, yeah.
It wouldn't have been possible if I hadn't had her support. So actually,
that's great.
I'm really grateful that she was understanding. But it was like something I really had to like get over to tell her I was going to do it. I'm sure to anybody listening, they're like, what's the big deal? But it was a big deal for me to come back into the fold after a very, very, very long time away.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's how I got into it. And I was thinking, I started right after, I guess, right at the end of winter. And I was thinking maybe I can have like a May release. I wanted to get a buffer of say 5 episodes. I was thinking maybe late May I can release, but actually because of COVID-19, I just had a lot of time to make it. And so I was able to move up my release time by a whole month, and I released in middle of April. And I guess the actual putting it out there, it's not that hard, right?
Yeah.
You do a little bit of Googling and you can figure it out.
Pretty much. Well, that's good.
Anyway,
though,
that's how I got started. As I'm sure you are, you kind of sit back and see if anybody's going to listen. And then they do. And it's kind of like, wow, this is so amazing.
Yeah.
You know, because you can't expect anybody to listen to the thing that you make. And then when they do, it's pretty gratifying.
Yeah, it definitely is. And myself with this podcast, you know, I wasn't planning this out months in advance. I think I took about a week worth of like, hey, I want to do something like this in the vein of D&D. And before I landed on this sort of theme I have right now, it was totally different. Uh-huh. It was actually going to be more akin to like a news show. It was going to be called DNN. And I was going to cover, you know, things that were just coming out on DT. Tabletop role-playing games. I even had a really cool intro. It was like, this is DNN. And all this stuff, but like I scrapped it all because I'm like, I don't want to keep up with the latest news and all this stuff. And it would just be hard to formulate things by myself. And I thought, you know, it's easy enough for me to talk to people. Why don't I just do that? And there's people like you who are so much more knowledgeable about things than I am, that not only do listeners get something out of this, but I do too. And I really do cherish that. And that's my theme. You know, I'm adding wealth to my chest, this ironbound chest. And it's something that I and listeners are able to treasure. And it's something I thank each of my guests every time. I'm like, it's amazing that you want to spend the time, you know, even if it's just an hour with me to talk about stuff, you know, even if it's just about a game, and it's great. I'm glad it worked out well, so well with you whenever you were first starting. And it's again, man, just please never stop. And if you do stop, I don't know what I'll do.
as long as I have like one listener, maybe you could be that listener. I'll keep making.
Gladly be that listener. So you are a big early D&D fan, you know, the first iterations of it. What would you say is your best argument for basic D&D or first edition D&D, whatever you want to call it, to something like 5th edition?
I gotta try and answer that having not played 5th edition. I've only just read the 5th edition rules like a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And as a little aside, there's like a demonstration character in 5th edition called Umara. And when I read that, my heart sank and I was like, oh, God damn it. Are you kidding
really?
Me? Like, I made up all the names of my characters at complete random. But when I read that, I was like, oh my God, people are going to think I'm ripping off the rule book for like of all the things.
No.
Anyway, for anyone who maybe, you know, raised an eyebrow at that when they heard my show, it's a coincidence. Anyway, so why would I recommend old school D&D or basic D&D? I wouldn't necessarily recommend it. It's a kind of a different game. It works for what I do because I don't want to get bogged down with a lot of rules. I think just for my medium, like for specifically how my show plays out, basic just works really well.
Yeah.
And also it does seem to me that people that might enjoy a darker, grittier story might also be those old school players who are used to or enjoy a higher level of lethality in the game. Whereas the sort of the new school players, it's much less lethal, which I think there's like definitely some pros to that. A lot of us old school players, we never get our characters to very high level, they die. And so we spend a lot of time in like levels 1, 2, and 3 and very little time in the upper levels. Whereas new schoolers or the current school of players, they probably do get to enjoy like actually using all of their characters' potential. So I think that if you want to like explore the whole array of what a character can do, maybe 5th edition is a better way to go. Or if you want to play like a very high fantasy game, I would say that 5th edition is probably the way to go. What I like about old school is that it is more lethal, so it is more sort of edge of your seat. It's more exciting for me. And I guess the other side of that coin is that like the payoff is higher when you do survive, achieve, or you know, when you do have victory. It's really satisfying because there was no safety net, right?
Absolutely.
And so it's just more of a dynamic, more of an extreme, I guess, way to play. So I can't say I would recommend old school over 5th edition necessarily. It just really depends. You know, if you want rules light or like some people love the crunchiness of Pathfinder, and that's great for those people. And some people just kind of want to make rules on the fly. And for those people, probably the OSR stuff is the way to go. But to be honest, they're all good. Like, I heard 4th edition wasn't good. I never played it. But they're all good. I think they're just a different flavor.
Yeah.
And I think it depends on the kind of game you want to play. And also they're attached to different worlds. Like the 5th edition, I think, is attached to a kind of world where magic is extremely common. You know, you're going to have a party that's going to have like a dragonborn and a tiefling and a halfling and a gnome and a human, and they're all going to be together, and it won't be weird that this combination of characters is together because they're all buddies. And when they go to the tavern, there's, you know, there's an imp working the bar, and there's, you know, it's high fantasy. And that's great. If that's what you enjoy, then that's awesome. For me, I guess I do enjoy very low fantasy because for me, like the more casual of approach you take to magic and fantastic elements, the more it strips the specialness out of it. And so I like a game where magic is rare and there's a huge mystique around it. But again, it really just depends on specifically what you and your group of friends likes.
I wouldn't say I'm surprised at that, but it's definitely not something that I would have thought that you would have said, you know. But I do agree with you there, where, you know, it is between old school and new school. There is definitely, you know, there's pros and cons for both, like you were saying, but it definitely does leave it to the players themselves to say, I like this or I don't, you know. But for definitely for what you're trying to accomplish in Tale of the Manticore, it is definitely something that needs that crunchiness, that needs that sense of danger and survival of the fittest sort of, you know, taste to it. Mm-hmm. And like I said before, man, you're knocking it out of the park, and I'm loving it. And I can't wait for more episodes.
Hey, thank you.
You're welcome. My last question now, what would you say, or maybe even what kind of advice would you give to people who were looking to get into D&D for their first time?
It's like asking a rock star what their political opinion is. Don't ask them. God, people that want to get into... I am a person that wants to get into D&D for... Not the first time, but for the first time again. All right, here's what I would say. But, oh my God, I'm not an expert on this one. I would say to understand, like, what it is, there are so many resources out there. Just watch it on Twitch or on YouTube or something like that. Watch a bunch of them because there's this huge range of quality. So if you see one and you just stumble upon one that's not very good, it might turn you off. But, you know, give it a few tries and try and get a sense of, like, it is going to be different for every group that you see. I've never played an online game. And actually, it just comes down to, like, at the beginning of this interview, I told you that I have a very, very wonky Wi-Fi connection because I live in an apartment building. I haven't tried it just because I kind of think it'd be kind of a disaster if I signed up for some kind of Roll20 game and then, you know, I just got booted out of the server halfway through.
What happened to John? So where'd he go?
I feel like for me, yeah, like I'm going to wait for COVID-19 to be done. I hope that that's not too long away. Yeah. And then I'm going to be looking for like a physical table, some kind of meetup or something like that. So I have to actually decided I'm going to find a game. But I think for me, I want the in-person thing. And I think given my technology here, I think actually it's probably my only choice.
Do you think you would get into fifth edition?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I would totally try a fifth edition. I suspect that I'm not going to love it, but you know what? I hear so many good things. I would absolutely go into it with an open mind, or a Pathfinder, or again, like whatever. The system doesn't really matter to me. It's more important that I find a group of people that kind of want the same thing out of it that I do. Like if I was to join a table and everyone takes out their characters and then the fourth person is like, my character is a gnome barbarian with a flatulence. Like that's it. Check, please. I'm done. That's not a game that I want to play.
And that's respectable though. And I think others absolutely should be respectful of that decision, saying, you know, this is a game that should be shared collaboratively. And, you know, and if not everyone around the table is okay with that, then I think people, you know, definitely you should just say, you know, okay, well then thanks for your time and I'll see you guys whenever.
Yeah.
So yeah.
You have fun that one time and then you don't go back. But yeah, for me, like the whole point of the game, it's, I want to have laughs, sure, all that, but like the immersive aspect of it, like, or the escapism aspect of it is, it's really important to me. I want to be comfortable to like get invested in the story. So for me, yeah, it's got to be a quote unquote serious game.
Well, good, man. I love to hear that, though. I just want to thank you so much again for just taking the time to come on here and talk with me. I've really enjoyed our discussion. Listeners, please, please, please go to taleofthemanticore.blogspot.com, or I think wherever you can find podcasts, you should be able to listen to Tale of the Manticore.
Yeah, wherever. Yeah. Austin, thank you so much for having me, too.
You are very much welcome. I would love to have you on in the future sometime to talk about more topics, if you ever have the time, by the way.
Let's do it. Let's wait until I've actually been to a physical table, and then I can come back and report on my actual first time the second time.
I think that'd be a great discussion there. So let's do it.
And then I'll be able to talk about 5th edition without having no experience with it.
There you go. Well, thank you for joining us, listeners. I will see you the next time you open the Ironbound chest.